This is VOA News. Via remote, I'm Diane Roberts. Globally, there are more than 160,000 deaths from COVID-19 and 2.3 million confirmed cases. In the United States, the death toll is more than 39,000, and the number of infections is approximately 740,000. A laboratory in the Chinese city at ground zero of the coronavirus outbreak, Wuhan, rejects U.S. theories that it spawned the pandemic. The denial came as world governments were debating how and when to ease lockdowns that have kept more than half of the planet, 4.5 billion people, confined to their homes and crippled the global economy. In Africa, lockdowns to slow the spread of the virus may have an unintended effect, choking the continent's already vulnerable food supply. Britain's senior minister said it was too early to consider easing restrictions given the worrying number of coronavirus deaths. The British government extended its lockdown from March 23rd to the end of April. U.S. Vice President Mike Pence said on Sunday morning news programs that every U.S. state has the ability to do enough testing to allow preliminary reopening of the economy and a partial restart of normal life. He said phase one would end stay-at-home restrictions for healthy people and would allow restaurants, cinemas, sporting venues, places of worship, and gyms to reopen with physical distancing. Meanwhile, Zimbabwe's president said Sunday they have extended their lockdown by 2 weeks to help curb the spread of the coronavirus. In Italy, current restrictions are set to be lifted May 4th. Officials are trying to determine which businesses to allow to resume operations and whether to let people out of their homes. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says the Food and Drug Administration has approved the state's COVID-19 test. He said in a Sunday news briefing they'll begin aggressive testing this week. This is VOA News. New York is the United States' epicenter of the crisis. Governor Cuomo also said the outbreak is on the descent, but added whether or not the descent continues depends on what we do. Health ministers from the group of 20 major economies held a virtual meeting Sunday to work on a joint response to the coronavirus pandemic, and they'll issue a statement later. A joint news conference had to be canceled on that subject, as the Saudi Arabian health minister had to attend an urgent COVID-19 task force meeting. Italy's prime minister told German media Sunday the full firepower of the European Union will be needed to overcome the historic shock of the coronavirus. He repeated calls to pool European debt and reiterated demands for the controversial pool debt instruments called Corona bonds. He insists opposition to them from the Netherlands and Germany has to change. There will be a video conference between EU leaders Thursday. Senior World Health Organization officials say there is no evidence people who have survived a bout of coronavirus become immune from the deadly disease and cannot pass the infection on to others. Anxious governments increasingly are pinning their hopes on serologic tests that look for antibodies in a person's immune system to clarify the number of people who have been exposed to the virus. They argue knowing this would allow them to send these people back into the workforce without risk of their getting infected or infecting others. But the head of the WHO's Emerging Diseases and Zoonosis Unit says these tests may not be able to provide the information governments are seeking, that while they do measure the level of antibodies, that doesn't mean somebody with them is immune to the disease. The English Premier League said Sunday Brighton's Amex Stadium is the latest British sports venue to become a coronavirus testing center. The site should reach capacity of up to 1,000 tests a day within a few days. Results should be available within 48 hours. The Tottenham Hotspur Stadium and Twickenham, the home of English rugby, have also been converted into drive-through testing facilities for the thousands more National Health Service staff and other key workers. Iran's Revolutionary Guard said Sunday the United States gave a Hollywood account of an encounter between the two states' navies in the Gulf. This after Washington said Tehran's vessels had harassed its ships. The U.S. Department of Defense accused Tehran of dangerous and provocative actions Wednesday. For its part, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps claims the U.S. Navy had presented an incorrect agenda-fueled narrative of the encounter. Vietnam protested Sunday at China's move to establish two administrative units on islands in the disputed South China Sea, saying it seriously violated Vietnam's sovereignty. Via remote, I'm Diane Roberts, VOA News.
morning and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
And what I expected was for the CJN to bring his team together and see how the court system can be managed in a strange way whereby the issue of COVID-19 will also be prevented from spreading through the court system. But shutting down of the court is a more catastrophic situation for Nigeria.
A Nigerian attorney plans to file a petition to challenge the government in court Monday.
If the government keep cracking down its militant, there is no other way. We won't have any other choice but to resume the demonstration, because this is exactly what the government wants.
Guinean opposition groups call for an international intervention to stop the arrests of supporters.
Respectful view and many others, I do not say all people, it was totally unnecessary for the president to ask for these powers. Look, now he has asked for them, and the next thing we hear, the police commissioner says that those who will say things that are offensive to government are going to be prosecuted.
And a Botswana human rights activist says it will be unacceptable for the government to use the state of emergency to clamp down on free speech. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Tosin Ojoamo, a Nigerian attorney, plans to file a court petition on Monday to challenge the government for imposing a lockdown without palliatives for citizens. It is, however, unclear if the courts will be opened on Monday due to the ongoing lockdown imposed by President Muhammadu Buhari. The move, officials say, is to stop the spread of the coronavirus. But attorney Ojoamo tells me it is morally and legally wrong for the government to fail to implement a comprehensive mechanism to provide the needs of citizens to cushion the effects of the lockdown.
The provision of the Constitution of the Federal Republic of Nigeria is very, very clear that the primary purpose of every government is the welfare of the Nigerian people. So it is morally and legally wrong for the federal government of Nigeria to lock Nigerians at home without creating or providing a comprehensive palliative to cushion the effect. Going by the United Nations UNDP data, over 90 million Nigerians are living in poverty. So for government to be aware of this and still went ahead to tell Nigerians to stay at home without provision of palliative shows the insensitivity of the government. And for us to prevent the reoccurrence of this situation, it is important to go to court and let the court take a decision on this matter so that it will not occur again. Because where if this thing happens and there is no challenge of this action, then it becomes a norm, and the government will see it as that anytime they want to lock Nigeria, they can tell Nigerians to be at home without making provision for their survival.
Officials have said that palliative measures have been implemented, including evidence that monies were shared to people to cushion the effects of the lockdown. What is your reaction to that?
Furthermore, I also want to let you know that the acclaimed palliative is also being used as an opportunity to loot by some people at the corridors of power. That's why you'll be hearing different cock and bull story about how money is being distributed. If you look at the way some palliative which they claim they are giving to people are being distributed, you will wait for this country. If you look at the video that has been flying around on the social media, for example, look, if you look at the regulars recently, the way money has been given, is that if you say you are locking people down for you to contain the spread of COVID-19, look at what is happening in Lagos. Look at the way palliative is being shared, where people are going as they are struggling to have access to what is being shared there. So please, this lockdown is just an act of irresponsibility by the government. That's why I say I have to challenge it in court, and I will also buttress my legal argument with all these evidences. Let's even see whether the lockdown has even achieved anything, rather it has even impoverished Nigerians more than before. And the issue of the COVID-19 spread that they are trying to prevent, if with this lockdown, as the numbers of the victim of COVID-19 has not been increasing every day in Nigeria, so it's very unfortunate that we have find ourselves in this situation. But we will not give up on Nigeria, because we have no other country than this country, and we'll do everything possible. And I've always had the belief that No Nigerian is more Nigerian than the other. We are all Nigerians and we have a duty to our country.
I understand you also want to challenge the constitutionality of the decision by the Chief Justice of Nigeria to shut down the court, describing it as unconstitutional. How do you plan on doing this?
Yes, Peter, as a legal practitioner in Nigeria and as someone who is conversant with the provision of the constitution in this country, there is no provision in the constitution, the 1999 constitution of the Federal Republic of Nigeria, as amended to be specific, giving or donating any power to the CJN to shut down courts on any ground. Because it does not give that kind of power to the CJN. And that's why I said I'm going to challenge it before the court of law. Because even under the military, the courts are not shut down. Even during emergencies, courts are not shut down. So the CJN does not have the constitutional power to direct that all the courts in Nigeria should be shut down. He has no power. He does not have such powers. That's why I will have to challenge, because the essence of doing these things is to prevent the recurrence of this situation. The shutting down of courts in Nigeria has led to massive detention of criminal suspects, and some of them have been languishing in detention. That's why the issue of our court system has always made provision that the court should be available at all times to listen to the complaint of the citizens. So that's why I said I'm going to challenge the powers of the CJN, the Chief Justice of Nigeria in court, on its locus, the powers which he is relying on to shut down our court. He has no such power under the constitution, and I stand to be corrected.
But there are some people who are suggesting that this forms part of the measures to curb the spread of the coronavirus, and allowing court sessions to continue basically will endanger the lives of Nigerians that the government seeks to protect as mandated by the constitution.
Well, the truth of the matter is that even the shutting down of court has even endangered the life of Nigerians more than even not shutting it down. Because how do you concede the fact that somebody who is being detained unlawfully, not having access to go to court to challenge this unlawful detention? So I don't agree with the fact that the shutting down of court is to prevent the spread of COVID-19 in Nigeria. Because the issue of the court system, there are so many measures that can be put in place, like restricting the number of persons that will access the courtrooms and some other things. But shutting down of the court is a catastrophic situation, because like what we are having now, even for the police to come out and say that their detention centers are filled up. And for if you look at the IG release, the IG said that the Nigerians should not even come to the police station. Imagine, just because of this COVID-19 issue. So it's a very serious situation. And what has happened is that if you look at the directive of the CJN, that directive is like, the CJN said, based on the directive of the president. So, and it has also brought to question the issue of the independence of judiciary in Nigeria. Because the president cannot give directives to the CJN. He has no such power. The judiciary is an independent arm of government. And what I expected was for the CJN to bring his team together and see how the court system can be managed in a situation whereby the issue of COVID-19 will also be prevented from spreading through the court system. But shutting down of the court is a more catastrophic situation for Nigeria.
Oluwatosin Ojoamo is a former special prosecutor of the Nigerian Special Presidential Investigation Panel for the Recovery of Public Property. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. Union opposition and civil society groups are calling for an intervention from the international community to help ease political tensions in the West African country. This after the groups accuse the government of using the ongoing fight against the spread of the coronavirus to arrest opponents and stifle dissent. Their remarks come after Fonike Mengu, a prominent member of the opposition, was arrested. This after he contributed to a live radio show via a telephone link-up. Local media reports of other arrests of opposition supporters in the capital, Conakry. Attorney Thiano Sulemani Balde is a member of the opposition National Front for the Defense of the Constitution, or FNDC, and president of the Board of Research Institute on Democracy and Rule of Law. He tells me that if the government refuses to stop the arrests, the opposition would have no choice than to organize protests despite the restrictions to halt the spread of the disease.
There are several either militant of the opposition or civil society activists who have been arrested either here in Conakry or in other parts of the country. This is really unfortunate, because everywhere the government is trying to calm down all protests. But here in Guinea, President Alpha Conde is taking advantage of the coronavirus to crack down on the opposition and the civil society activists. Instead of focusing how to fight this disease, he's arresting people, sending them to jail. This is really very sad.
Fiero, what is your reaction to calls by some Guineans on the international community to put additional pressure on President Conde and his inner circle to stop them from arresting opponents of his administration during this pandemic of the coronavirus disease?
We have to make the president understand he cannot keep cracking down, arresting people while the concern should be how to fight against the coronavirus. He has to stop violating the fundamental human right of Guineans. You know, the issue is this. President Alpha Conde has never had any concern about the Guinean life. He's willing to do whatever it takes to maintain himself in power and to forget what means to save life of Guineans. So we need only, also we need here in Guinea, but also outside, anyone who can help out to make him understand he has to stop his agenda.
Supporters of the government are of the view that these opponents and the recent arrest of the opposition leader are breaking the measures the administration is implementing to ensure that the spread of the coronavirus is restricted or halted. What is your response to that?
You know, the FNDC members, all political leaders, since the beginning, they have advising the Guinean people to stay home and also to obey the decision made by the government when it comes to protecting their life. It's one of the reasons that the FNDC decide to halt all demonstration for now. So how they can say there are some people coming either from the FNDC or, you know, any other militant from the opposition who is violating the decision made by the government? It doesn't make any sense. Fonike Mange was arrested yesterday because he made an intervention by phone in one of the local radio stations. And it's his fundamental right. Everywhere, people can speak out when the government is violating the right of Guineans. Once again, he should have, as he has said in his speech, halt all political activities right now and focus about how to fight against this disease and save Guinean's life. But no, he's taking advantage of the coronavirus to crack down the militant and then to implement his agenda, which is not acceptable for anyone.
Supporters of the government are of the opinion that the FNDC leader was trying to create panic and fear. As the government is implementing measures to protect the people, he's saying something contrary that could create panic and fear, which is unacceptable.
You know, when the government want to attack people, this is not the first time. They can tell you things that you can't imagine of. Otherwise, even the FNDC members right now, they are out providing advice, counsel, and making people understand they have to protect themselves. They have to be isolated in order to avoid the spread of the coronavirus. But this government, they don't have any principle. They don't have any value and are willing to do whatever it takes to make up stories in order to crack down the opposition militant and the civil society activist, which if they were smart enough, they should have at least stopped it for now.
So what are members of the FNDC as well as civil society groups going to do about this ongoing arrest that you've been complaining about, that you cannot mobilize the people to go on demonstration on protest due to the ongoing pandemic?
Right now, there are several meetings and discussion within the FNDC to find out how to handle the issue. But if the government keep cracking down its militant, there is no other way. We won't have any other choice but to resume the demonstration. because this is exactly what the government wants.
Attorney Thieno Sulemani Balde is a member of the opposition National Front for the Defense of the Constitution and president of the Board of Research Institute on Democracy and Rule of Law in Guinea. He spoke with me from the Guinean capital, Conakry. A Botswana human rights activist says citizens will not give up their freedom of speech as guaranteed by the Constitution in spite of the ongoing state of emergency. Attorney Kosi Nkakahai says the government will have a fight on its hands if it goes down the path of clamping down on dissent using the state of emergency. His comments follow local media reports that suspects believed to have spread rumors due to their social media posts will soon be prosecuted. The posts, the police say, are inappropriate, aim to create panic. But attorney Kosi Ngakai tells me that it is unacceptable for the government to use the guise of limiting the spread of the coronavirus to clamp down on free speech.
We are privileged as Botswana to be perhaps one of the very few African countries that have been able to enjoy free speech rights since independence. And of late, we have had the government invokes some laws, some of which have always existed, which in our respectful view encroach upon the enjoyment of such rights. And when I say that it will be a cold day in hell before we give up those rights, I simply mean it as I say it. There's no way we are going to give up our rights.
Kosi, there are concerns by some people in Botswana that because of this free speech, people are abusing it, even during this pandemic when most people are so afraid and they are spreading rumors and peddling lies which could create panic, inappropriate words at some police officers are saying. How do you react to that?
Indeed, there are people who are abusing their free speech rights. That's correct. And we do see social media posts from such people every now and then. But it's actually worse than that, because the government's answer to that has not been targeted. It has not been specifically targeted at addressing that problem. Instead, what we actually received from the police commissioner here is a press statement to the effect that people should desist from maligning the national leaders or saying offensive statements against national leaders. I'm actually quoting that part. People should desist from maligning national leaders and saying offensive statements against them. That's got nothing to do with COVID-19. It's got everything to do with quashing political dissent and actually interfering with people's free speech rights. So to the extent that government's concern can be targeted towards dealing with misinformation regarding the COVID-19 pandemic, I have absolutely no problem with that. But if government is intending to use the COVID-19 pandemic as an excuse to engage in a much broader campaign against free speech rights, certainly I have a problem with it.
What legal recourse do the people of Botswana have in order to challenge what you anticipate or what some are saying could be a way of the government to suppress dissent, which, of course, they deny doing?
It's a bit of a difficult question because we are presently undergoing a state of emergency, the effect of which is that the president, by and large, is able to effect or come up with pronouncements regarding how the public should behave. And when you are in a state of emergency, which was pronounced under the pretext that it is purely about COVID-19, you find yourself in that situation where it's very hard to litigate your rights. We can still go to the courts and perhaps challenge some of the laws that the president has enacted, but it's going to be extremely difficult because in all likelihood, we are simply going to be told the country is going through an emergency and these measures are intended to contain the emergency. And we all agree there's an emergency.
Kosi, what do you say to those who are of the view that the state of emergency gives the president, and for that matter, his administration, unbridled and unchecked powers, which they said is not what the Constitution anticipates?
I think the Constitution intended to give the president sufficient powers to deal with an emergency, as in the present case. So it's really difficult to say that there's really any anomaly with what has happened, because Parliament has actually authorized it, and the constitutional provisions that are necessary for authorizing that process were actually followed. The overriding question has been and still is whether it was really necessary for the president to ask for state of emergency powers when, in fact, we have a public health act that actually deals with our health emergencies and that give the director of public health all the powers necessary to ensure that there are lockdowns and that there are all medical procedures and interventions that are necessary to ensure that the situation is actually contained. So the big question has been, since all these powers are already given to the director of health, why is it that the president wants powers? What is he going to do with those powers? And that is really the critical question that we are dealing with presently as a nation, because in my respectful view and many others, I do not say all people, it was totally unnecessary for the president to ask for these powers. Look, now he has asked for them, and the next thing we hear, the police commissioner says that those who will say things that are offensive to government are going to be prosecuted.
Attorney Kosi Ngakai is a Botswana human rights activist. He spoke with me from the capital, Habaroni. The Kenyan health minister says the country has received masks, tubes, and other medical equipment from China that will enable wider testing for the coronavirus. For VOA, Ryle Ombor reports from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
Earlier this week, Kenya's Ministry of Health said it will begin mass testing for COVID-19 in hopes of controlling the spread of the virus. Minister of Health Mutahi Kagwe said Friday that a flight from China brought equipment that will help authorities carry out the plan.
On this flight, we have been informed that we have got 500,000 three-ply masks. We have got 200,000 testing and sampling tubes. And this is a very important thing. These 200,000 sampling tubes are key to our ability to mass test Kenyans. Without these sampling tubes, we would not be able, and we were not going to be able, to start our mass testing capability. But with these tubes now, we are able to fast track.
The flight also brought 4,000 shoe covers, which will be used by frontline health workers, and 76,000 N95 masks and face visors. Kagwe said a consignment of ventilators is also on its way from China. On Friday morning, the number of COVID-19 cases in Kenya rose to 246 after 12 more people tested positive. The first phase of mass testing campaign will prioritize high-density areas such as slums and high-risk areas such as hospitals and quarantine facilities. Kagwe said that some of the newly arrived equipment was what the Ministry of Health desperately needed to kickstart the mass testing operation.
As we stand right now, at this hour, we have already tested about 450 samples. Out of these 450 samples, we have already got 12 positive cases, and we have not finished the day. And five, for example, are hotel workers, and another four from our contact tracing capability. What this tells you is that we need to really start the testing capacity so that the contacts of those people who are positive can also be tested, and therefore we can be able to maintain and contain the pandemic.
As positive cases continue to rise in Africa, the World Health Organization has warned that African countries are not getting accurate figures on the extent of the outbreak due to a lack of capability to conduct mass testing. The United States, China, and other countries have ramped up assistance to African countries, supplying critical medical supplies to various countries on the continent. South Africa, which has the highest number of coronavirus infections in sub-Saharan Africa, rolled out mass testing earlier this month. There are now more than 10,000 confirmed COVID-19 cases continent-wide. Raya Lombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
And this is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Douglas Mpuga and music from our African collection. But first, the outbreak of the novel coronavirus is affecting people around the world with no distinction of race, color, or social status. However, experts say poor people with disabilities and other vulnerable groups can be disproportionately harmed. VOA's health correspondent Lenore Modu spoke with Melinda Gates, co-founder of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, to discuss how the foundation is contributing to the global fight against the COVID-19 pandemic.
The world is seeing an unprecedented crisis with the global pandemic of the COVID-19 coronavirus. First of all, what are your thoughts on what we are seeing right now?
Well, we're still seeing it on the rise in so many places around the world. And I think one of the things we need to recognize as a global community is that COVID-19 anywhere is COVID-19 everywhere. And we're just starting to see the effects on the most vulnerable parts of the population. And I have to be honest, that's the thing that keeps me up at night.
The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation allocated $100 million to help the response with COVID-19, especially in South Asia and Africa. Let's talk about Africa and the priorities on the continent with regards to this fund in particular.
Yes. So one of the things our foundation has been doing actually for the last couple of years is working to make sure that the African CDC is very strong so that there can be an African response. So we continue to work with the African CDC. We are doing disease modeling very proactively to show as we get more and more data about how this disease spreads and who it affects the most in terms of vulnerable populations. We're putting that disease modeling information out there. And so we're trying then to take that to various countries like Southeast Asia, as you said, or many, many countries we're working with in Africa to say, here's what you need to do to prepare your health system for what's about to come. The other thing that we're doing is trying to make sure people understand that testing needs to happen for everyone, and it needs to happen in a very equitable way.
Massive testing is definitely one approach that experts are saying will be very critical on the continent. How much of the resources have been allocated, especially to testing, given that it's an important step when we talk about preparedness?
Yeah, so testing is fundamental. You have to know who's sick and who's not sick. And if you don't do testing and don't do contact tracing, you will get mass spread of this disease. And so what we need to make sure is that testing kits are available, that they can be easy to use. And also, one of the things the foundation's been working on with the FDA here in the United States is working to show, could we have a home test kit available? Then you could get them out very broadly across Africa. Because as you know, one of the things that's going to be very, very difficult for somebody who lives in a township or who lives in a refugee camp is to social distance. So the only tools we have right now are physical distancing and washing our hands. I've been in many African settings where people don't have running water to wash their hands. So we absolutely have to help people understand who has this disease and who doesn't, and how do we help them self-isolate so that it doesn't become a widespread infection throughout an entire region.
So practically, how do we help vulnerable population, children, pregnant women, even refugees and others? What can we do in this case with COVID-19 to help them?
What do? We make sure, first of all, that they're fed, people need to be able to have a meal in every single day. They need to have food, because if you don't start there, if people don't have access to food, they have to go out and find food, bring food into their home. We know it's something we all need. So one of the most important things we can do right now, I feel, is tell people we need to put money into making sure that people actually have access to food. Then we have to make sure that women know, if they're pregnant, where can you go safely to still do your prenatal appointments? Where can you go to safely deliver that baby? Don't deliver at home. We have to help, practically speaking, the primary health care system separate out the patients who come in who have COVID from, say, patients who come in and are pregnant. That is fundamental in terms of having the health care system still work and support women who are pregnant. So those are two very practical examples.
Even though right now Africa has less cases of infection of COVID globally, but health experts are still warning that there is a big risk on the continent. What do you see as the priorities then moving forward?
I think there's an enormous risk on the continent. I think we could see an explosion of disease. And so the priorities have to be making sure people are fed, then testing and doing contact tracing. And then from there, making sure the people who can physically distance themselves. And then we need to make sure lots of protective gear gets out, this PPE that we're all talking about that healthcare workers wear, and masks, so that healthcare workers can protect themselves and can keep the health system up and running, so that those who are sick can still come in and get what they need. So we need to do a lot of modeling too, some on good data, to say this is where the resources should go. And I think here in the United States, one thing we can do is make sure that we're not saying, oh, well, only the protective gear is for the United States or for Europe. We have to make sure it's distributed en masse equitably around the world. Otherwise, the most vulnerable are the ones who are going to lose the most in this disease.
Melinda Gates is co-founder of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. She spoke with viewers Lenore Modu via Skype from Seattle, Washington. The World Health Organization reports it is increasing aid to Africa to try to contain the spread of COVID-19 amid a big spike in the number of cases and deaths from this deadly virus across the continent. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
Compared to other regions in the world, the number of cases and deaths in Africa is still very low. But WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says there are worrying signs that this is changing, and that COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus, is taking root.
In the past week, there has been a 51% increase in the number of reported cases in my own continent, Africa, and a 60% increase in the number of reported deaths. With the current challenge of obtaining testing kits, it's likely that the real numbers are higher than reported.
Nearly 19,000 cases have been reported to the WHO, and close to 1,000 people have lost their lives. The UN Economic Commission for Europe warns the pandemic could kill at least 300,000 people and push as many as 30 million into extreme poverty. Tedros says he has been speaking with South African President Cyril Ramaphosa, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, and heads of the African Union, International Monetary Fund, and World Bank to strengthen support for Africa.
The African Centers for Disease Control and Prevention announced yesterday that more than 1 million tests for COVID-19 will be rolled out across the continent starting next week, strengthening and supporting African Union in institutions like the African CDC. We really help, not only for now, but also for future.
Tedros is emerging from several days of bruising criticism by the Trump administration, which alleges he mishandled the coronavirus pandemic. To counter that impression, Tedros is enumerating several other measures he has taken to manage this crisis. In addition to increasing essential supplies of tests and personal protective equipment, Tedros says he also is working to accelerate the development, production, and equitable distribution of a vaccine to protect the world from COVID-19. To get help in this effort, Tedros says he has spoken to and received commitments from French President Emmanuel Macron, U.S. philanthropist Bill Gates, and British Prime Minister Boris Johnson. Johnson had been hospitalized after testing positive for the coronavirus, but recently was released. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Mpuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. In light of growing concerns and evolving nature on COVID-19 amidst lockdown in most countries, Africa's football governing body, CAF, has decided to postpone the following matches until further notice. Total CAF Champions League and Total CAF Confederation Cup semi-final matches, both legs were scheduled for May 1st to 3rd and May 8th to 10th, 2020. Also, the FIFA Under-17 Women's World Cup qualifiers, initially scheduled for May 1st to 3rd and May 15th to 17th, 2020. A statement from CAF Emergency Committee says a new schedule will be announced in due time. Meanwhile, a group of African football legends have come together for a short video for the Safe Hands and No Handshake Challenge as part of efforts towards the fight against COVID-19 pandemic. The 98 seconds video has players in their respective locations emphasizing the importance of washing hands and avoiding handshake, critical to battle against COVID-19. Representing Virus Generations and led by CAF Deputy Secretary General Anthony Buffo, they include Roger Miller and Joseph Bell of Cameroon, Herita Ilunga and Tresa Lamona Lualua of the DR Congo, El Haji Dorf, Alassane Ndour, Kalilo Fadiga and Diomase Kamara of Senegal, Mustafa El Hadil of Morocco, Jean Seninde of Uganda, Will Gomez of Egypt, Fatou Daouda of Ghana, and Vincent Enyima of Nigeria. The likes of Diouf and Lualua spoke in their local dialects, Wolof and Lingala, for their natives, while Ugandan Seninde is the only female. As a result of COVID-19, CAF has suspended all competitions until further notice. In athletics, organizers of the UK's major mass participation event, including the London Marathon, have launched a campaign to help charities plug unexpected £4 billion income shortfall. The 2.6 challenge will launch on Sunday, April 26. The original date for the London Marathon, the race was postponed until October 4th. Meanwhile, Kenya's Daniel Wanjiru, winner of the 2017 London Marathon, has been provisionally suspended by the Athletics Integrity Unit, AIU. On Tuesday, AIU website confirmed that a charge has been issued for what it called use of a prohibited substance or method. The 27-year-old cannot participate in any competition until a hearing has taken place. Wanjiru also won the 2016 Amsterdam Marathon and has finished 8th and 11th in the past 2 years in London. And Ghana's Premier League side, Asante Kotoko, has been given up to May 17th by the World Football Governing Body, FIFA, to pay $240,000 to Tunisian giants Esperance or face stricter sanctions. Asante Kotoko were fined by the FIFA Disciplinary Committee for the illegal transfer of Emmanuel Clote in 2015, who was then on the books of the Tunisian club. A statement from FIFA gave Asante Kotoko a deadline of 30 days to clear the debt. Finally, in golf, the PGA Tour has announced plans to resume in June with the first four tournaments played behind closed doors. The tour has been suspended since March 12th because of the coronavirus pandemic. The Charles Schwab Challenge in Texas is now scheduled to be the first tournament back on June 11th to 14th. The golfing calendar has been severely disrupted because of the COVID-19 outbreak, with the Open Championship cancelled and the three other men's majors rescheduled. And that's about it for this edition of Nathan Africa Sports. Now back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
bread and butter. Yeah, they try to toast me. I'm married to the game, but the game don't love me. It'll leave me in a heartbeat. That's why I'm cold-blooded. When I say I love you, I mean it deeply. I can't see life without you living with me. And if you love someone, I know you feel me. When I say before they take you, they gonna have to kill me. I'm talking they gonna have the Army, Marine, Navy, SEAL me. Yeah, the world knows me, but babe, you know the real me. I play any hand that they deal me. So tell the dealer he gonna have to deal with me. Even when you're gone, I'ma hunt you like a Chris Webber timeout final four. So till the sky comes crashing down, world falls apart. Till death do us part, you my heart for sure.
Hi, baby, I love you, I need you.
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Shaka Sali and reporter Douglas Mpuga with producer Saida Hamdoun, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, if you think you have someone eating out of your hands, it is a good idea to count your fingers. I'm your host, Peter Clotte in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
This is the